Palantir is the engine. Oh, by the way, the head of, we showed him just most recently at our live show, Alan Karp, the head of Palantir, said that it was really important to stop these student protests about Gaza, because if they win the intellectual battle over it, we'll never be able to send U.S. military out anywhere again. And so that was who this is. So Palantir, the old founded Palantir, Palantir's that guy, Alex Karp, is the engine on which the surveillance state runs. And soon after Vance was announced as Trump's vice president, it was reported that Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, as well as Palantir itself, were backing a Trump-Vance super PAC called America PAC. So there they are. Okay, so now let me bring in the author of that article to fill in the rest of the gaps. Whitney Webb, she's been a professional writer, researcher, and journalist since 2016. From 2017 to 2020, she was a staff writer and senior investigator reporter for Mint Press News. She's a contributing editor for Unlimited Hangout and author of the book One Nation Under Blackmail, about the connection between the U.S. intelligence services, organized crime, and Jeffrey Epstein. Welcome back to the show, Whitney Webb.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, what's so bad about J.D. Vance's connection with Peter Thiel? And do you think that the money that Peter Thiel has given to J.D. Vance is going to manifest in more surveillance state activity from J.D. Vance and Donald Trump?
Yes, I absolutely do. Not just because in general, politicians, when they're in office, in contrast to what they say on the campaign trail, when they're in office, they do what their donors tell them to do. So I think that's what we're likely to see in a second Trump administration, particularly with J.D. Vance as the vice president. Keep in mind, Peter Thiel was a major donor to Trump during his first campaign cycle, played an outsized role in his transition team as a result, and had major influence over people that were put in Trump's cabinet, particularly in the Pentagon, which led to an explosion of contracts between the U.S. military and Palantir during Trump's first term, as well as other, defense startups and military and intelligence contractors that are funded by Peter Thiel, which include Clearview AI, which is a facial recognition company, and Anduril, which was created by Palmer Luckey and Trey Stevens. Trey Stevens being a big part of Thiel's founders fund, and Palmer Luckey having been a Thiel fellow that sold his VR company Oculus Rift to Facebook while Peter Thiel was on the board of Facebook. And as far as J.D. Vance is concerned, J.D. Vance not only really owes his political career to Peter Thiel, he also owes his previous venture capital career to Peter Thiel, because it started at a Thiel-linked firm called Mithril Capital. And then, after he went and joined the venture capital firm of a former or the AOL co-founder Steve Case, the Rise of the Rest Fund I mentioned earlier, and his current VC firm, Narya Capital, he co-founded with another person that he worked with at Mithril Capital. And was largely funded by Peter Thiel, and Peter Thiel was the main bankroller of his initial Senate campaign, and subsequently was the person that brought him back into Trump's good graces after his, a lot of the quotes that have resurfaced recently about him being a never-Trumper and comparing Trump to Hitler and whatnot. So a lot of, essentially the person that did more than anything else to get J.D. Vance as vice president is Peter Thiel.
So you think that J.D. Vance went from being a never Trumper calling Trump Hitler to being his vice president, to being praising Trump and being his vice president because of Peter Thiel?
Yeah, Peter Thiel personally accompanied Vance to Mar-a-Lago and brokered that. I don't know exactly what you'd call it, sort of a smoothing over of what had previously been a rocky relationship. So I think absolutely Peter Thiel has been the guiding hand of J.D. Vance's entire career. And considering that Peter Thiel, when he was a donor last time, had an outsized influence on Trump's policies, at least early on, and military policies, we're likely to see it, likely to see him be even more influential in a second term, not just because of J.D. Vance, but now after J.D. Vance was announced, you have, Palantir itself and another Palantir co-founder, Joe Lonsdale, giving heavily to the Trump campaign now that Vance has been selected as a pick. So these Thiel-founded companies founded companies since Vance was announced, have essentially signal that they're all in on the Trump Vance campaign. And this also includes Palmer Luckey as well, of the defense contractor Anduril, which is making a lot of unmanned drones and other, you know, defense weapons. It's building our virtual border wall on the U.S.-Mexico border that Trump supports instead of a physical barrier that he used to campaign on. And they're also hugely involved in the Ukrainian conflict.
So,
of a second Trump administration winding down American aid to Ukraine, I think with Thiel in the equation, becomes questionable right away, because Anduril, Clearview, and Palantir itself intimately involved with the Ukrainian military as it relates to the conflict with Russia.
Well,
so anything that would see their contracts or their bottom line as it relates to their involvement in that conflict, I think it's unlikely that it would whittle down significantly if Thiel has the influence that is to be expected in a second Trump term.
So do you think that is already... So that's depressing. Thanks. But
it's the uniparty. Both sides love war, you know, and they love surveillance. So
do you think that so Palantir, which is Thiel founded, is making big money off Ukraine?
Yeah, they're majorly involved. They're also hugely involved in Israel's war on Gaza.
Right.
Supercharging the use of AI to murder innocent people under the, you know, a lot of these Thiel connected defense contractors claim that they're making war more efficient and sort of reducing the bloated military industrial complex. But if their idea of efficiency is AI targeting, I mean, you can see, as has been demonstrated quite clearly in Gaza, that precise AI targeting still results in the mass murder of entire families.
So do you think that? So it was surprising to me, because Donald Trump seemed like he couldn't wait to become president again so he could end the Ukraine war, right? That, like, he knew he had like an ace up his sleeve and he knew how to do it. And the way you do it is you just threaten to, you just tell Ukraine to accept the terms of a peace agreement. And then you try to work out the best, most favorable peace agreement for Ukraine. And then you move on with your life.
Well, it's possible, but look at what the Ukraine conflict started not long after, you know, the Afghanistan war ended, you know,
right.
The national security state in the U.S. Maybe it will shut down one conflict, but it'll start another one soon after. That's why you have a CIA involvement with the beginnings of the Ukraine conflict, because they had run out of their, you know, way to launder weapons and all sorts of money. In Afghanistan, so they started Ukraine. So, you know, if Trump is going to end the Ukraine conflict, he'd probably, I don't know, start a war with Iran, which is oddly enough something that J.D. Vance, as soon as he was named nominee, despite his Quincy Institute speech where he claimed to be against going to war with Iran, was like, let's punch Iran hard. And he takes a lot of money from AIPAC. And if you're familiar with them, they've been, you know, lobbying us along with the Israeli government and Israeli intelligence for war with Iran for a very, very, very long time. And as what's going on in Gaza and Israel threatens to expand into a broader regional war, some of the companies that stand to benefit most from that are connected to Peter Thiel.
So my question was going to be, do you think that, well, of course, you know, when Joe Biden pulled out of Afghanistan, it was Trump who actually negotiated that peace deal. And then Joe Biden decided to pull out and leave all our equipment behind. And the reason why he did that is obvious to someone like me and people who watch this show, because then that means that they have to buy all new equipment from the same people who manufactured that first set of equipment that we're leaving there. $85 billion worth of stuff is what Trump said in his speech anyway. So I was, you know, crossing my fingers that Donald Trump would end this Ukraine war, and he's more of a deal maker where he tries to find deals. But then he went, and he's credited with making sure this last round of funding went to Ukraine. So do you think that comes from J.D. Vance's influence and Peter Thiel's influence and the money that they gave to the campaign?
It's certainly possible, but there's any other number of reasons. Trump has many donors. Peter Thiel is just one of them. But with J.D. Vance, he's becoming increasingly influential. And he was very influential again during the first campaign. But it's important to keep in mind that, like, some of, you know, a lot of the biggest donors to the Trump campaign are very wealthy Zionists and neoconservatives who try and conflate U.S. Foreign policy goals with Israeli regional policy goals. And there has, in Trump's first term, you know, he, one of his biggest donor actually was Sheldon Adelson, who had tried to promote the idea of preemptively nuking Iran. It was under Trump that Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian general, was murdered during a diplomatic mission that could have easily spiraled into a regional war, but it didn't. They attempted to coup Venezuela, for example. In the Trump administration, John Bolton was his national security advisor. I think it's likely this time around, it's very possible he'll make similar cabinet choices. For example, there's calls right now for Trump to install Eric Prince as head of the Pentagon in his second term.
You know what, Eric Prince has
been going around on podcast appearance after podcast appearance. There have been tweets that have gotten tens of thousands of likes calling for him to be in charge of the Secret Service, if not in charge of the entire military. And this is very unsettling because he was a CIA asset during the Iraq War. His CIA handler was a man named Alvin Krongard, who's one of the major suspects in 9/11 insider trading and a former CIA deputy director. And of course, during Blackwater, while Blackwater was a contractor, sure, they weren't, you know, Raytheon or whatever, but they killed untold number of innocent civilians just wreaked havoc and engaged in extreme bad behavior that had extremely dire consequences for the countries where they were operating, and operated essentially as the CIA death squad in the Middle East. So the idea that this is the person that should lead the Pentagon because he wants to privatize our wars.
Yes.
Back there when the Ukraine conflict started, he was trying to privatize the Ukrainian war. Before that, wanted to privatize the Afghanistan war. So the answer to our imperial wars isn't to privatize them. It should be to end them. So, you know, but if you privatize them, it's going to be very lucrative for all these defense contractors. And the ones that are seeking to come up and dominate the defense contracting space are these firms like Anduril and Clearview AI and a lot of these other Thiel-connected defense contractors. But of course, there's obviously more in the mix than just them. But I think we should consider that, you know, there's more than meets the eye here. And once these people are in office, things change a lot compared to their campaign rhetoric. I mean, I would encourage people to go back and look at Trump's campaign rhetoric when he was campaigning for the first time in 2015 for the 2016 election, and what he actually did when he was in office, because a lot of people have forgotten.
Well, he said he was going to drain the swamp. And the joke that I did at that time was he drained the swamp. And what did he find at the bottom? His cabinet.
More or less, that's what happened.
So
he wants to put in Jamie Dimon potentially as Treasury Secretary.
I know. So
how is that populism? How are people acting like this is a populist ticket?
And that's why
maybe J.D. Vance has, you know, cloaked himself in rhetoric and, you know, other things to be the person that sort of gives this populist anti-establishment wash to Trump. But we have to remember what happened last time and follow the money, because historically in American politics, that's what you have to do to know how things are actually going to turn out. And I would encourage people to be very vigilant about it. But as I noted in my article, one of the main reasons to be concerned about Peter Thiel is that the company he's made Palantir is at the heart of the surveillance state, and including on the war of domestic terror. And some of his companies brag about targeting Trump supporters expressly. Clearview AI brags about helping law enforcement send people that were present at the Capitol on January 6th to prison. Mm-hmm. It's in their sales pitch. And this is a company deeply tied to Peter Thiel. I think people should, you know, look at the evidence and look at, you know, again, follow the money. That's how you figure out how things actually work.
So this is an irony, is that one of Trump and J.D. Vance's biggest donors has a video out that I think it's on YouTube even, that brags about using their software, their programs to identify January 6th protesters and put him in jail. It seems so crazy. And then they're all buddied up with this guy. And then, well, so just to get back really quick, so Eric Prince, his big idea for, you know what his big idea for Gaza was, right? He had his big idea was to flood it with
And the Pentagon told him no.
Ocean
but
water.
Imagine if he's in charge of the Pentagon.
He wanted to flood all of Gaza. Flood it. So that would flood the tunnels.
Kill everybody, basically.
So he would kill the whole... He would just make the whole place like a Noah's Ark flood. And that was his big idea. Mm-hmm. And he was upset that the Pentagon wouldn't let him do it. That's the guy that they want Trump to put it. So, mm-hmm. but here... So Trump, in his speech, he said, I could end a war with a phone call. So his whole thing is about making deals and ending wars instead of starting them. And what do you think that he learned from his first term and he'll implement that? Or do you think he'll just go right back to the swamp?
You know, I think it's possible, but I don't think it's likely. And so if you're one of those people that's like, well, I prefer to vote for Trump, you know, but these issues concern me, you should be very vigilant and not expect that you can just sit back in your armchair and new wars won't happen. You know, I think what a lot of people in the United States and also in other countries, the way they sort of approach politics these days is, you know, I'm going to vote for this guy. And as long as this guy gets in the White House or whatever, you know, everything, he's going to magically fix everything. I don't think that's true. And in this case, we have an example of how, you know, in his first term, his campaign rhetoric differed very much so from his policy record as president. And I think it's very likely that that will happen again, especially when you consider that he has framed himself as sort of this anti-establishment populist. But he's talking about putting people like Jamie Dimon in charge of the Treasury and people like Eric Prince in the Pentagon. And I'm sure, you know, we'll be making some more, you know, floating some potential cabinet ideas as it, you know, as it gets either closer to the election or immediately thereafter. And so, you know, I don't want to say it's not going to I don't like to make those kind of predictions. But again, I think because of what we saw last time, it's very unlikely that it's going to be really radically different in terms of being less interventionist than it was in the first in Trump's first term as president. And I think it's actually, unfortunately, quite likely that we could see some sort of hostilities in the Middle East because, you know, Israel is in a war that it is likely to go regional, involve Hezbollah, potentially involve Yemen now, and is likely to spread beyond that. And Israel has been very interested in getting, I mean, former Mossad directors have said on record that the goal is to have the United States make the first strike against Iran when they're ready for that war. So if there was any time for that war to happen and be likely, it's, you know, over the next 4 years or so. And Trump is, you know, unfortunately very beholden to the Israel lobby, as is J.D. Vance, and really as are both parties. So I think people should be very, you know, vigilant about the threat of more Middle Eastern wars in particular.
So you made this point. We've made this point before on the show. So I was, you know, again, holding out hope because people smarter than me have hope for J.D. Vance and Trump being non-interventionists, going against Mitch McConnell's foreign policy, trying to build up our own manufacturing base back in the United States. Trump saying that he wants to end wars, not start them. And he didn't start in his first term, although he did kill that.
Almost did
with the Iranian, killed the Iranian general, but
and
he
tried
didn't.
To coup Venezuela.
And then he tried to do the coup in Venezuela. Right. Okay. But that's just standard shit. But, so just like Joe Biden was allowed to pull out of Afghanistan because the blob had this Ukraine war in the chamber. Do you think, so now it's making me think as I talk to you that the blob is going to allow J.D. Vance and Trump to end the Ukraine war? Because it's killing, by the way, it's not good for Europe's economy and the blowing up the pipeline that it's made. It's not good for Europe at all. I can't believe they went along with it, but they did. But so what I'm hearing from you is that they might let Trump and Vance pull out of and end Ukraine, but it's because they have an Iranian war in the chamber. And here's what.
Or some other war.
Here's what Vance had to say about Iran.
A lot of people recognize that we need to do something with Iran, but not these weak little bombing runs. If you're going to punch the Iranians, you punch them hard, and that's what he did when he took out Soleimani.
What the fuck? Like, what is the obsession with bombing the Middle East? What is our thing about, oh, so we already overthrew Iraq, we already overthrew Libya, we tried our best in Syria, and we slaughtered All those people didn't do it. Afghanistan for 20 years, and now they want to go back. Yemen, Somalia, and now they want to go in and they want to do Iran. Like, what is the bug up their ass with Iran? Now, is that just...
Let me explain it to you. The bug up their ass is a policy paper written by this neocon named Richard Perle in the late 90s called A Clean Break. And basically, that document, it was written for Netanyahu, even though Richard Perle is an American that served later in the George W. Bush administration and was an architect of the Iraq War. In there, in that document, he essentially talks about how Israel needs to engineer the elimination of Saddam Hussein and also of the Syrian government. And from then on, it expanded to more countries as the neocons got in power with the George W. Bush administration. And one of the hallmarks of the neocons is, again, conflating the U.S. National interest as it relates to foreign policy with Israeli regional interests. And they're not the same a lot of the time. And, you know, when it comes to Richard Perle and Peter Thiel, it was actually Richard Perle who helped Peter Thiel set up Palantir in the early 2000s with Alex Karp. And connected them with the godfather of modern surveillance, a man named John Poindexter, who created Total Information Awareness and was previously the highest ranking member of the Reagan administration to be convicted in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal.
He was convicted of five different felonies, right?
Yes. And William Barr covered it all up when he was attorney general for Bush Sr., and he came back as attorney general under Trump. And but what's important here is that during Iran-Contra, people like Poindexter, as well as Oliver North, who returned during the Trump administration to pitch Trump alongside Eric Prince with creating a private CIA. Great idea. Just kidding. But anyway, in Iran-Contra, Oliver North and Poindexter and others created this database called Main Corps, which contained the names of Americans who were considered unfriendly and could be rounded up during a vaguely defined national crisis that would include a widespread nonviolent against a military intervention abroad. So a massive protest, for example, against a U.S. foreign war. People could be rounded up and the Constitution could be suspended to put these Americans away.
So this is important. This is important. I don't want to breeze over this. So there's a thing called Main Corps. And this thing called Main Corps, Barack Obama repealed habeas corpus, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So these all things go together. So what does that mean, Jimmy? So they don't even have to give you a trial. If they want to lock you up, they can just say you're a terrorist, and then they can have what they call indefinite detention, thanks to Barack Obama and the 2011 National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1021. Now, how this works with Main Corps is explain to people again. You went a little fast. Explain to people again what Main Corps is.
Main Corps is a database that was created by the Iran-Contra people in the 1980s, but it still exists. It contains names of Americans who are deemed quote unquote unfriendly by the national security state and could be rounded up or incarcerated during a national crisis. It came up during the Iran-Contra hearings, and the hearings were shut down when Senator Jack Brooks tried to ask a question about it.
Was that what that was?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. I saw. So that was this Daniel Inouye shut that down. Mm-hmm. The senator from Hawaii.
Hawaii. Mm-hmm.
He shut that down. Okay, so now
there was a Miami Herald report about it, actually, because it involved Cheney and Rumsfeld as well, even though they weren't officially in the Reagan administration.
So this was they're collecting names of Americans, and yes. I'm sure someone like me would be on that list. And what they would do is this: if they started a war. And they wanted to.
That was very unpopular. There was a financial crisis.
They would just put.
Or
they
could just put Henry Paulson under Bush in 2008 piloted the idea of declaring martial law across the country if the banks weren't bailed out.
And they
it's the same people.
And they could throw people in jail. They explicitly said this, right? So, but Main Corps didn't go away with Iran-Contra. How did it?
No.
What's the modern reinvention of Main Corps?
Yeah, so Maine Corps was is the database, right? And it was the same people that created that, which was in use after 9/11, and as far as we know, still exists. The last mainstream media report on it was in 2008, and at that point, it had 3 million Americans on it. And as far as we know, it hasn't gone away, so it's likely more. But the same people that made that made this DARPA program called Total Information Awareness, or TIA.
Right.
And the goal of TIA was to basically combine with Maine Corps, but, you know, through data mining, not only decide who gets on the Maine Corps list, but also create sort of this pre-crime paradigm, predictive policing.
Pre-crime. They're really doing this. So this TIA, what does TIA stand for?
Total Information Awareness.
Now, was that a government
the program?
Was that originally a government program, but it's
it
now
a
been
DARPA program?
It's a DARPA program, but now it's Palantir is doing this. Peter Thiel.
Now it's Palantir. Now, yes.
And
so
what is
TIA?
Tell people what that
sorry.
Is.
Yeah. So Total Information Awareness was defunded by Congress not long after it was launched, because every mainstream media outlet, the ACLU and organizations like it, across the board said this will end privacy for Americans. It's
right.
It's unconstitutional. So it was defunded.
And why? What did it do?
It sucked up. It was going to basically spy on all Americans, total information awareness, right? And decide who was going to commit a crime before it happened.
Yes.
Terror attacks before it happened, bioterror, even pandemics before they happen, which is why a lot of the policies that originally Total Information Awareness proposed came back during the Trump administration during COVID. And Palantir was the contractor for all of those. What do you know?
So,
but anyway.
So TIA, so just to get, so this TIA thing, which is came from Maine Corps, so TIA, they're going to use...
Well, it's related to Maine
Corps. Related. So they're going to use every telephone call you ever make, every text you ever make, every Google search, every website you ever go to. They have a way of collecting all of that data.
They collect all of it.
And they put it into a database on you. And they have this kind of capability. And so immediately after this was invented, you're right, all these... all these organizations pushed back against it. So the government said, okay, we're not going to do it anymore. But then Palantir was like, well, we'll do it because we don't have those.
Well,
go ahead.
It's even worse than that. Palantir didn't exist yet. Palantir, Peter Thiel created Palantir as Total Information Awareness was getting into trouble and experiencing the public backlash. And as they were setting it up, they used Richard Perle to connect them with Poindexter, who was running Total Information Awareness, about essentially privatizing the program and having Palantir do what TIA or Total Information Awareness had intended to do. And Total Information Awareness, though it was housed in DARPA, was intimately pushed and developed with CIA involvement, particularly the chief information officer of the CIA at the time, a guy named Alan Wade, who was actually a business partner of Ghislaine Maxwell's sister, Christine, fun fact.
Let me break in just one more side, just so people realize the scope of what we're talking about, because this is really ominous, right? So, and this has been coming for a long time, and now Peter Thiel and Palantir is at the forefront of this. And so this, the Poindexter's and a DARPA program manager, this is from your article, LifeLog sought to build a database tracking a person's entire existence that included an individual's relationships and communications, meaning phone calls, mail, email, all plus their media consumption habits, their purchases, and much more, in order to build a digital record of, quote, everything an individual says, sees, or does.
Jeez.
LifeLog.
Yeah, this program was LifeLog. Yeah.
They would. This is LifeLog. They would then take this unstructured data and organize it into discrete episodes or snapshots, while also mapping out relationships, memories, events, and experiences. This seems so Aldous Huxley crazy futuristic, yes. But it's not future. It's here now. And they have
it
these
happened decades ago.
And these and so the yeah. person in charge of this right now, or the person pushing it in the private sector, would be Peter Thiel. And Peter Thiel is now responsible for J.D. Vance's funding and now and getting J.D. Vance connected with Donald Trump and for funding being a big funder of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance's campaign right now. And so that's why this is all important.
Yeah, it's also important because Palantir is really a CIA front company.
Right.
So when they created it and picked John Poindexter's brain about how to turn total information awareness into a private company, their first funder was the CIA's NQTEL, and the CIA was their only client until 2008. And between 2005 and 2009, the top engineers at Palantir, according to them, made over 200 visits to CIA headquarters for them to develop their product.
And tell people who now this idea. So we've already revealed and discovered at this show through Chuck Schumer telling Rachel Maddow that Trump is being dumb to criticize the intelligence community, meaning the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI, because mm-hmm. they have six ways to Sunday to get back at you. And sure. one of those ways was tapping his phone. Another way was doing Russiagate. So the six ways, those are the final way was this assassination attempt. Now, tell people that this. So my question has been since he revealed is that the CIA, the FBI, NSA, they don't work for the president, that the president actually works for them. So who do they work for? And I think, you know, do they work for Wall Street?
Well, the CIA, when it was created, was all Wall Street lawyers and bankers, mm-hmm. and former CIA deputy directors have said that. And, you know, I've maintained for a while that the CIA essentially has functioned as the secret police of Wall Street and of the U.S. oligarchy for some time. That's why their coups, especially if you look at the earlier ones, you know, like in Guatemala, for example, or in Iran, were for multinational corporations headquartered in the U.S. or with a lot of, you know, American interests.
That would be like Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and some of my recent reports, too, discuss a lot about PayPal, which Peter Thiel also co-founded, and how they're basically, you know, very intelligence connected, along with eBay. The eBay founder, Pierre Omidyar, now owns PayPal, and how a lot of people involved in that particular network are involved in a lot of efforts of related to banking that the CIA was actually pushing a few decades ago. For people that are interested in looking that, you can go to Unlimited Hangout and look at some of our more recent reports, not necessarily this one about J.D. Vance, though.
There's this like glimmer of light that comes out of Elon Musk, which manifests itself in Twitter and his dedication,
yes.
to a certain amount of free speech, which is way more than anywhere else. So can I hold out that hope at all for?
Yeah. I don't share that hope, but let me explain why. In my opinion, Elon Musk bought Twitter for user data much more than he bought it for free speech. And keep in mind that he's a Pentagon he's a military and intelligence contractor, just like Palantir is. So let's back up for a second. So Palantir, deeply tied to the CIA, it decides who goes on the domestic terror watch list or main core for the CIA based on your online activity. That's what Palantir does.
Oh, I'm on LifeLog, for sure.
LifeLog, you mentioned earlier, Peter Thiel, at the time he was trying to privatize total information awareness, which was directly related to LifeLog in many ways, he becomes the first the first outside investor in Facebook that made the company what it is today. Yeah.
So Facebook is like a DARPA.
Launched the same day that LifeLog was shut down, and later went on to hire former DARPA directors like Regina Dugan to run top parts of their enterprise, as well as, you know, people like Sheryl Sandberg, who was like deeply tied up with Larry Summers. And isn't it weird that Larry Summers ends up on the board of like Thiel protege companies like Sam Altman's OpenAI and all these other things? Interesting. But you know, Facebook, what it was doing also was sucking up all of this data. We were freely giving it to them. And this is what, you know, the guy that created LifeLog was like directly said, Facebook is like what LifeLog was going to be. But people were worried about giving LifeLog data when it was a DARPA program. But now that it's a private company, no one cares. But we know that Facebook and all these other companies have given our data to the government. Even new X policies have said that, like, your DMs can be given to the government if there are requests made, and things like that. So I think Elon Musk plays both sides. I think he does good cop, bad cop, between himself and his CEO, Linda Yaccarino. You know, she'll come out and say something that's unpopular and Elon Musk will say something else. But ultimately, you know, Twitter's policy isn't really that different. And now the people doing identity verification for Twitter, because the goal for Twitter, Elon Musk said at the very beginning, is to verify all humans. So have you verify yourself by linking your government issued ID to your Twitter account. So no more anonymous Twitter accounts, right? And the problem with that is that, you know, they probably know who you are if you're anonymous, but if they don't like what you're saying and, or, you know, they think you might commit a crime or something like that before you do it in this pre-crime paradigm that they've set up, if they link it to your government ID, that's troubling. And the company now doing it, it used to be an Israeli intelligence connected firm. Now it's Stripe, which I believe is funded by Peter Thiel and some of these other PayPal guys.
So Stripe,
oddly enough.
So Stripe, PayPal, Patreon, all of them are censorious, meaning that they censor people they don't like. You know, that Simon Ataba, he got his whole, Stripe was how he funded his, he's the African, from Africa, reporter inside the White House or the White House press room, and Jen Psaki would never call on him. And so they said, you violated our terms of service. And so now he can't, he couldn't use Stripe anymore, which is how his whole company was set up, to use them to process donations and their memberships and what have you. So they basically can defund you. That's the new censorship, right? Same thing with PayPal. They've done that to people. Same thing with Patreon. So that's why there seems to be no way. So there's no way out. There's no way for, like, I encourage people to leave Patreon and go to our website, but our website uses Stripe. So
sure. I mean, unfortunately mine does too, because there aren't really any other options. And a lot of these companies are like de facto monopolies, but there's the possibility still for us to build alternatives. And, you know, I think it's important to consider, to talk about this expressly for those reasons. And as far as this pre-crime stuff goes, I want to go back to Trump's record when he was president the first time. After the El Paso Walmart shooting, Trump called on big tech to surveil its users and in order to identify shooters before they can commit a crime.
No way.
So it was overtly calling for pre-crime. At the same time, Bill Barr legalized pre-crime by creating a Department of Justice program called DEEP that actually has arrested people for Facebook posts.
No, DEEP, DEEP.
It's called, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a real program, and so, it's still on the books.
So Bill Barr,
at the same time, he was trying to eliminate encryption also, or at least get a government backdoor into devices that use encryption. And then shortly thereafter, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, along with a close friend of Trump, who's the former head of NBC Universal, Bob Wright, we're trying to get Trump to create a new agency called HARPA, a health DARPA. And the first program of that they pitched was called Safe Homes, which is an acronym for something else. And what they wanted to do there was data mine American social media accounts, as well as extract information from Amazon Echoes, Google Home, Fitbits, and Apple Watches, and
Jesus,
run it through AI to identify if you've been saying something that shows early signs of neuropsychiatric violence. And then based on that, determine, you know, if you need to go to a court-ordered physician visit, if you need to be put under house arrest or anything, or put in preventative detention.
So
this is something that they were talking about back then. And even though Trump allegedly loved the idea, he didn't make HARPA. But you know who made HARPA? Joe Biden did. He called it ARPA-H, just moved the H to the end. But it's the same program, the same people.
So
are behind it. So this is a bipartisan agenda.
So this is
to try and use our online activity against us. And there needs to be awareness about it, because it's really the only way we can stop it. They have our data. They've had our data, and they've been profiling us with Palantir. I mean, they couldn't do it without Palantir. And something needs to be said and something needs to be done. And the fact that there's so many Trump supporters backing this, when they're likely, you know, make up the bulk of the list, people that own guns and like care about the Constitution and all this stuff, are going to be the people that the federal government doesn't like. And if you look at the Biden administration's framework for the war on domestic terror, which has been developed by every administration in the post 9/11 era, they make it very clear that domestic terrorists, their definition of it includes people on the left and the right, people that oppose all forms of capitalism. That includes the WEF's favored stakeholder capitalism, or crony capitalism, anything in that, people that are extreme environmentalists, people that oppose perceived government overreach. All of this is considered enough to get you to be considered a threat by the federal government. And this is a national security state apparatus out of control. And I would argue that, you know, with Trump and J.D. Vance, they are trying to sell themselves as anti-establishment, potentially libertarian and populist. And that is not what these companies are. The fact that Trump is taking money from Palantir and Palantir co-founders, whether it's Peter Thiel or Joe Lonsdale, is very alarming. And their potential influence on the vice presidential pick is also very alarming. Because if people care about reigning in the surveillance state or stopping the war on domestic terror, they should be outraged by this, because ultimately what these campaigns are is a way to stifle dissent. And that's what they've been from the very beginning. When you look back at their how it started, you know, during the Iran-Contra era, very alarming stuff. And so I think the more people know about this, the more we can do to stop it.
So this and, you know, this might sound counterintuitive, but would you advise me to buy some Palantir stock?
Oh my God. Well, you know, as far as Palantir stock go, they've done outrageously well, because they just gobble up contracts across the board. And if you look at Trump's first term, the amount of contracts they got, I mean, the New York Times called it a bonanza for Palantir, the yeah. Trump administration. So it seems likely a second Trump administration will also maybe even be a bigger bonanza.
So
for them this time around, I don't give financial advice. I don't like Palantir. I think they're bad for.
Yeah, no, I was. Yes, I try not to. You know, you can't get around it, right? I don't invest in stock anymore. I stopped doing that. I know that's not smart, but I can't do it. So I just put my money in money markets and things, CDs, shit like that. And T-bills, ironically. But anyway, they don't tax you in California. But so just real quickly, also, the Event 201, what was Peter Thiel's connection? So if people don't know what Event 201 was, they did a mock. They pretended they were doing a mock. Hey, what would happen if a virus got out, and how would we handle it? They did that like 5 seconds before we had to go into lockdowns for coronavirus. And who's they that did that? Tell people who the they is.
Right. So Event 201 was hosted by the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, which previously the people that ran that, and which included one of the moderators for Event 201, or the people that did the simulation before the 2001 anthrax attacks that directly predicted what would happen just several months later. When the anthrax attacks did happen, and obviously the anthrax attacks were intended to go much farther but a lot of their plans for utilizing the aftermath of the anthrax attacks sort of things didn't go according to plan, basically, when it got traced back to the U.S. military, that the anthrax was from the U.S. military, right?
Yeah.
So Event 201 was a simulation very much like that, involving a lot of actors that benefited hugely from COVID-19 policies. And one of the, it's not a Peter Thiel connection, but it is a Palantir connection. So one of the longest running consultants for Palantir is a woman named Avril Haines, who was a CIA deputy director under Obama, serving yep. under John Brennan. Avril Haines was one of, you know, these people involved directly in the Event 201 simulation.
And she's
under Biden is the top intelligence official in his administration. So the director of national intelligence. So basically the CIA's boss is her.
What's her connection to Palantir?
She's a longtime consultant for them. Okay. But as soon as she joined the Biden campaign, she tried to delete it from her biographies online.
Now, Whitney, I saw you made this tweet. You said, with Trump's vice president pick being a protege of Peter Thiel, you can kiss critical reporting from alternative media on his campaign goodbye, since Thiel funds most of the big names. Not that there was really any to begin with. So you mean any reporting on Peter Thiel? So,
well, yeah, not a lot of reporting on Peter
Thiel. No, I don't want to flatter myself, But would you include me in that as one of the big names that Thiel funds?
Well, I don't know. Do you take money from Peter Thiel? I mean, I appreciate you having me on to talk about him and why I think he's horrible for human freedom in the United States of America.
I mean, he gave me the down payment for my house. Is that bad? No.
oh.
No, we're on just like, you know, Russell Brand and Glenn Greenwald, we're on Rumble. And in order for us to come to put our videos up on Rumble, which I wouldn't have, they offered us a financial incentive to do so. So we do that. So now they incentivize us to use Rumble. I like using Rumble because, again, just like Twitter, for whatever reason, they don't police my speech and they don't demonetize my videos. And they let me say whatever I want, unlike Google, which is directly a CIA invention. So
they're all CIA inventions. So
for whatever reason, this CIA invention allows me the freedom to say what I want.
Sure. But think about the utility of that for someone like Peter Thiel, who's developed this domestic terror spying apparatus. The problem lies in the fact that, you know, perhaps people aren't censoring there, but they're giving them data that they can use to profile you on behalf of their intelligence, you know, the intelligence agencies that pay them.
Yeah.
So I think that's the issue. So, you know, I think it would clear up a lot, perhaps, if Rumble leadership talked about how they use your user data and how they prevent companies and intelligence contractors like Peter, like Palantir, from sucking it all up and using it to profile Americans. Right?
I mean, no matter what you do, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, mm-hmm. Twitter, YouTube, for sure. No matter what you do, there's someone sucking up your data.
Yes.
Right. So there's no getting out of it.
The getting out of it is finding other platforms or finding ways to try and be as anonymous online. But unfortunately, we're being led to a world in PayPal and some other Thiel connected companies. And really, most of big tech and the biggest banks in the country are part of this effort at the World Economic Forum called the Partnership Against Cybercrime, along with the FBI and the Secret Service and Israeli intelligence. And their goal is to have you have a digital ID in order to access the internet. To stop cybercrime and to stop hacking. And they define cybercrime as speech they don't like also.
That's right. So if you could be you considered a cyber terrorist, if they say you're spreading misinformation, you're a terrorist.
Yes.
They can put you in jail with not a charge because of Barack Obama repealing habeas corpus. And all they have to do is say you're a cyber terrorist. And that means you said something online they didn't like. Now, Whitney, for an hour, we've been sitting here being critical of Peter Thiel and Palantir and all things J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. Would you still consider me part of this group of people who isn't going to be critical reporting?
Well, I don't think I ever said I considered you to be part of that, but there certainly are significant figures in alternative media, and I don't really want to name any names because I've been on some of their shows as well.
So you're compromised.
I didn't mean it like that, but I just don't want to like start, you know, a fight unnecessarily with people that have been nice to me, I guess. But I think that, you know, when you take money from someone, it can impact what you report on. And I think some people challenge that, which you have done in this case, right? And other people do not. But I think someone like Peter Thiel is hugely influential, and I think he's not talked about enough. I mean, the billionaires like him have so much money to spend on PR and to spend on buying up influencers to try and make them look like something they're not. I mean, Peter Thiel has convinced people he's a libertarian when he's given the CIA, the national security state, the most powerful weapon in its arsenal of Palantir, not to mention some of the other companies that he's helped develop, including one that he funded alongside Jeffrey Epstein, is taking over 911 call centers all over the country called Carbine 911. You know, there's all this stuff happening. People need to know what Peter Thiel is actually doing and, you know, be aware of what they're using the internet for when you interact with it and try and take steps to mitigate it. But ultimately, I think they're trying to get us, you know, Silicon Valley runs both political parties.
That's right.
They're essentially our de facto government because they've merged with the national security
yes.
state. All of the big tech companies are military and intelligence contractors. It's not just Palantir, but they're a big one and they put you on the naughty list, right? But, you know, essentially they all do it. And they, this is really the people that run our government, and they're leading us into a technocratic, totalitarian hellhole. And the only way to get out of it at some point is to not be dependent on their services. And they've made us dependent on their services. So I think it's high time we can still talk freely, you know, at least on some platforms, to use that to develop solutions and develop alternatives that don't involve these people, don't involve these billionaires. And it's another interesting thing too, that all of the big Silicon Valley oligarchs, every single one of them had a relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Why is that? Why did Larry Page disappear when he was subpoenaed as part of the J.P. Morgan Epstein USBI case? Why was Sergey Brin and Elon Musk subpoenaed? Why did Jeff Bezos and Ghislaine Maxwell have such a close relationship? Why did Reid Hoffman hang out with Jeffrey Epstein all the time? Peter Thiel had meetings with Jeffrey Epstein and co-funded companies with him. You know, so what's going on here?
So
we want these people deciding our future and deciding who gets on the naughty list? I mean, it's just insane.
So when you say we have to become not dependent on their platforms, so if after 9/11, the government wanted all the telecommunications companies to give their data to the government, and there was one guy, I can't remember his name, and I can't remember the name of the company, maybe you remember, who wouldn't do it. He was the CEO of a telecom company, and he wouldn't give the data. And what did they do to him? They put him in jail. They made him a criminal, just like they did doing to Trump, just like they're doing to Stop Cop City protesters, like they did to Lula, like they're doing to Imran Khan. If you won't go along with the game, they'll never be a platform that isn't, because if there is, they'll just criminalize that billionaire who's funding it or whoever it is and put them in jail, right?
Yeah, but I mean, is this the kind of society where we would just want to sit back and like vote for Trump and hope that that's going to fix everything?
No.
I mean, that's not going to solve this problem either. You know what I'm saying?
And, no, I agree.
Neither is obviously voting for the Democrat candidate. None of these candidates are going to get in the White House and magically fix everything. It's up to Americans to take individual responsibility for our lives and try and make our communities and ourselves and our families as resilient as possible for all this crazy stuff that's starting to happen, whether it's, you know, problems with the economy, another war, supply chain issues, cyber attacks, whatever. I mean, obviously things are going to get really crazy, and we need to be able to rely on each other and our communities and not rely on the government or big tech to come in and solve all our problems. Big tech wants to lead us to a world where everything we do is dependent on our digital ID and our online activity and how we've been profiled. They want us to go live in the metaverse and all of this stuff. If you don't want that world, it's time to think about what you're going to do about it.
You don't like 15.
And start thinking about alternatives.
You don't like the idea of a 15-minute city and CBDCs.
No, I don't. But again, let's keep in mind too, as far as it relates to CBDCs, that it's very possible to have programmable, surveillable money, not just issued by the central bank, but also the big Wall Street banks.
That's
which
right.
Is exactly what people like Jamie Dimon have talked about doing.
That's right.
With their JPM coin.
That's
and
right.
Things like that. So even though Trump has disavowed CBDCs,
yes.
He certainly hasn't disavowed programmable, surveillable money.
That's
and in
right.
The United States, it was always most likely to come not from the Fed, but from the Wall Street banks, who in the United States own the Federal Reserve System. The most powerful bank in the Federal Reserve System is the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Its largest shareholder is J.P. Morgan.
That's right. It's very, very depressing to talk to you as always. And
well, I'm not trying to be depressing. I just think people need to stop looking for political saviors and people who have shown us who they are the first time. And that is definitely Trump. Trump had a major crisis on his hands with COVID. He gave monetary response completely over to his pal, Larry Fink, who has helped engineer this crazy inflationary crisis we are in, along with Steve Mnuchin, his Treasury Secretary the first time. And he had horrible cabinet picks. He promoted pre-crime big tech surveillance when he was in office, among other things. People should know this and know, you know, just not get caught up in campaign rhetoric. It's easy. It's very easy to have that happen, but we need to not be so emotional about how we approach this and think about these things critically and, you know, maybe organize as Americans and try and make a better country, you know, ourselves, and stop waiting for the government to do it when we know it's run by, you know, intelligence agencies and organized crime. Like, these people, they're not going to save us. They're just going to use us however they can, exploit us so that they can continue their lucrative rackets into the next millennia. You know, that's essentially what they've done for a long time. And I think we should say no to those. And essentially every candidate that gets promoted by either of the two parties is going to be backed by that blob of intelligence and organized crime. Otherwise, you don't get those big party nominations.
That is correct. So why do you think that the deep state hates Trump so much to the point where they impeached him twice, gave him four different? I mean, if he's going along and playing their say, and Peter Thiel is their big funder, why do they seem to hate him so much on the surface? In fact, almost an assassination attempt was obviously an inside job. So what do you say to that?
Well, I think part of it is factional stuff. You know, I've said this about why the reason why Epstein was taken out as well. You know, I think the reason Epstein was taken out was because he was close to Mohammed bin Salman and helped engineer his rise to power and got rid of John Brennan's golden boy, the previous crown prince that Brennan had cultivated. And Brennan got mad and was involved in creating things like Russiagate and all these other things, and I think also getting Epstein sort of taken out. But I think, you know, at the time Epstein died, he was involved, MBS was very involved with Kushner and a lot, you know, not necessarily that Trump and Epstein were close, but it seems pretty likely that they were batting for the same team at the time Epstein died, or at least before he was arrested in 2019. That's why you have, you know, Steve Bannon being the person trying to rehabilitate Trump's image and all of this stuff, filming him for like 15 hours to make a documentary about how great he is and all.
So you think it's just factional?
Well, I think part of it's factional, but also keep in mind, too, that there's a lot of stuff. You know, I would argue that some political stuff that happens is there to distract us. If you look at Peter Thiel, you know, he's a big Republican donor. Eric Schmidt is a big Democrat donor. And they both essentially, you know, run the American faction on the Bilderberg conference together. So they agree on a lot more than they don't at the end of the day. And I think they like to distract us with a lot of this stuff. And Trump is, you know, he most people know him for being, before he was president, for being a reality TV star and for being on, you know, the on wrestling and all of that stuff. You know, he knows how to be photogenic. And, you know, in the first campaign, he was pretty funny at times. And he, you know, he knows how to make, you know, regular Americans like him. But I think people should distance them, not just focus so much on the persona that he's developed, but also on his policies. And so I think some of it's factional. But I think also, you know, considering that Trump was really a big disappointment for his base in significant ways the first time around, how do you rebuild trust in a person and get people to have all that energy behind a candidate again, specifically when he's going to, you know, talking about putting Jamie Dimon in charge of the Treasury and stuff, you know, and doing things that are clearly not populist this time around. And, you know, I think you have to convince the, you know, they've sort of created this paradigm where, you know, if you're targeted by, you know, certain factions of the so-called deep state, then it automatically means that you're that you're, you know, good for Americans and you're going to uphold, you know, freedom and all of this. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that's sort of a false dichotomy that's been made to some extent. You know, I think some of the stuff that maybe that has been used to like target Trump and all of that, you know, maybe some of it's inorganic, not necessarily talking about the weekend's events, but, you know, maybe some of these court cases and some of these other things, you know, I think it's very possible because this is a guy that helped lock down the country, gave Fauci awards, has promoted Operation Warp Speed the whole time. His base hated that. So how do you re-energize them and make them like it again, like him again? You know, we have to keep in mind, too, that, you know, Trump has powerful backers that like what he did the first time and have wanted him back in power. And I think people, you know, should keep this kind of stuff in mind. I mean, maybe it sounds a little bit.
You think there's a possibility that these prosecutions of Trump are actually a smokescreen to make people think that he's got enemies inside the deep state and he's got the right kind of enemies, so he's on our side, and that this is all concocted somehow by people who support Trump, not by people who actually hate Trump?
Well, I mean, I think you know, it's possible that some of those have been an effort to sort of make it look like he's up fighting against these people when he served them so much in his first term. Yeah, I think there's some of that too, but I think there's, you know, factionalism as well, you know, between certain groups that take turns, I guess, dominating the unelected bureaucracy that is the so-called deep state, right? But ultimately, you know, Trump, when he was in office, served the national security state, I think he will, and Wall Street. And I think it's very likely he'll be doing that again in his second term. And now you're having all these people after the weekend's events and after the RNC nomination, including people like Mark Zuckerberg, like praising Trump and all this stuff.
Yes.
It just seems a little weird. So I think it's very possible that there was a need to make Trump look like, you know, a warrior against the deep state at a time when he wasn't in office, to convince him, to convince his base that this time would be different, when he's giving us plenty of clues that it's very unlikely that it will be any different.
Thank you for your time today. I appreciate it. And it's always enlightening, and you have more information. You're a real encyclopedia on this stuff. So I'm glad you came on. Thank you. So we'll see you again soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Thanks. Take care.
Okay. You too.